Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is an episode number 240 with our very good friend Zap Anderson back after a year right during SIGGRAPH. And he was on before. He was on what episode was he on before? I think it was 190, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago. What's really cool about that episode, Kristen, is that I don't know if you know, it's actually one of our biggest episodes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So what happened was that Zap and I got into this long conversation about the term metalness, very geeky conversation, metalness for PBR shaders, which inspired me to get all that information and put it into a blog post about metalness. And now if any one of you guys go to the internet and open up a Google search and type in metalness, that blog post comes up like number one, and that includes Zap's podcast in there. So that's the reason it is. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty cool. So I have another challenge for Zap's podcast this year, which is episode 240, as I said, is he and I get into some deep tangents, which I think you were very entertained by. Mm-hmm. But we also talked about something called OSL, which is the Open Shading Language. We really talk about that a lot. So I probably should write another blog post about OSL and see how that does on our Richter scale. Well, what did you think? Okay, so you're not necessarily a big V-Ray person. You haven't really used V-Ray, Kristen, but
no.
you are getting much more involved in the podcast, which is fun, right?
Yes, I like it.
Yeah, you like it?
Yeah.
Cool. So you've been listening to these. What did you find interesting about this podcast?
Well, the two things I took away, well, I was learning about machine learning and deep learning. Well, that's what he said the words of the year were.
Uh-huh.
And people were just kind of throwing those around a little bit.
Yeah.
And as you said, it was overused, like organic.
Yes.
Which I thought was funny. But yeah, I'm learning more and more each time.
Right.
So, and then you guys went on the tangent about domestic animals and how we've created them to look more the way we want them to look like, and then
right.
Wild animals just all look the same to us. So
yeah,
that was really
have
funny.
Have you ever thought
like
about that?
No, but I mean, yes, it makes sense when I listen.
When
to
you
podcasts.
Look at like, can you see if you see a bunch of cheetahs? Can you tell them apart?
No, not really.
Right,
yeah.
But do cheetahs tell themselves apart?
Probably.
Right, but you can tell different dogs apart and different cats apart. Yeah, it's
because
weird.
Because we've like created it, kind of like you said.
Yeah, it's weird. It's very strange. So yeah, the whole thing. And then I don't know. It's been fascinating. And Zap is a really cool guy. He does love to go on his little tangents. By the way, I don't know if you know this. He wrote a new theme song to the podcast, which will be tagging onto the front of this.
Ooh, yeah. Didn't know about that.
So, yep, it'll be on soon. All right. Well, cool. Zap is really cool, and I have a feeling that he's going to be on probably at least on a yearly basis because he's always got stuff to say. It's a lot of fun. A couple of stuff we need to announce. What's going on our events side, Kristen?
So September 13th in Amsterdam,
nice.
The IBC and Intel Visual Cloud Conference is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And our Phil Miller will be talking about, what's it? He'll just be talking.
Oh, the Visual Cloud Conference sessions, right. Yeah, that's really cool. IBC is a big deal. It's kind of, for those of you who don't know, IBC is basically the NAB of Europe, and it's a big conference in terms of the broadcasting world, and it's really interesting that Phil will be there. He's obviously a big person at Chaos Group these days, and he's been really focusing a lot on the interesting thing going on in cloud. So that's really cool. There's another event going on in Kiev. What's going on in Kiev?
So Kiev will be this is one of the speakers, Alex Malsev.
Mm-hmm.
He was the creator of our graphics at Total Chaos. So he'll speaking at this event.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be at their tech park. So, and it's a Chaos Group sponsored celebration. So for everything 3D.
Okay, great. CG event in Kiev, and that's going to be September 22nd, 2019. Very cool. And Alex Malsev will be there, which will be very exciting. All of this information is available where?
At chaosgroup.com/events.
Right. So we always have our events posted there. you guys are interested in finding out more, never, you know, just go and check it out. We've got a couple other community events going on. What else is happening?
So again, we talked about this last week, the Chaos Group Academy, which will happen September 19th and 20th at our headquarters in Sofia, Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. And there'll still be Academy for Professionals, and it's designed for beginners or intermediate level V-Ray users, mm-hmm. who want to expand their knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it will be, the certification will be based on V-Ray for 3ds Max. Mm-hmm. And tickets for this would be from chaosgroup.com/academy/professionals.
Very good. Very good. Let's see what else is going on. I will be going to Malta again for THU. I think this is going to be my sixth THU in a row. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I never miss him at this point. And Kristen, you have been helping me to get round up some podcast guests, which has been really exciting. Obviously, Andre and all the THU people have been really helpful as well. Very excited to go there, and that's going to be happening. I'll be there from September. I mean, actually, I'm going to be there earlier than, but the event is happening September 23rd to the 28th. And very excited to be there. Lots of cool things going on at THU this year. Lots of people I know will be there. But if you will be there and want to give us a shout out, please do. Just sort of say, hey, I'll be at THU. I'd love to see you. Labs@chaosgroup.com. That's the easiest way to get in touch with us. What else is going on? There's some couple of interesting blog posts going on that people sort of check out. Yeah. What's going on there? Oh, there's a Rusty Hazleton run, right?
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, the Rusty Hazleton, and then we have the V-Ray for Unreal. We just had an update on that.
Oh, right, V-Ray mm-hmm. for Unreal. So if you guys have V-Ray for Unreal, there's a hot fix going on there, so make sure to check it out and get your fixes of V-Ray. Your updates there would be really good. And we have one other big thing. Boy, this is a long intro. One other big thing. Total Chaos 2020. I know it seems like we just had 2019, but we're already planning 2020. Mm-hmm. And we have a call for speakers. Go ahead and tell us what that's about.
So if you or anyone you know is interested to be a speaker at Total Chaos 2020, you can just go to chaosgroup.com/total-chaos/become-speaker,
right.
But it'll be on our website. And we're just looking for anyone, any talented artists or developers, have a vision or a story to tell, and come into computer graphics.
Right,
we'd
right.
love it.
Absolutely. Come check it out. Total Chaos 2020 is happening, and it will be very exciting to hear some of your ideas and get you guys involved at this early stage. It's going to be really cool that way. All right, guys, thank you so much, and hopefully you will enjoy this amazing podcast with a brand new theme song from our good friend Zap Anderson. And I'm going to call this episode Zap Anderson Part 2.
Welcome to the CD Garage, where the chaos group talks. Defend Joker, build the last bucket drops. We go to the pile of red, in high dynamic range, to go left and feel the conclusion. It's a global illumination, won't leave you astray. And while it is based like it moves with real swell, you need to make sure to rent with food that's funny. Welcome to the CD Garage, where masters have feasts. It's all rapping and information beast. Good physics based and written, crafted well. Just make sure that all your shapes are input in OSL.
How do you feel? Comfortable?
I feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
My right elbow hurts because I bumped it in a wall while parking one of these nice little Lime bikes.
Okay. Yes.
Did you try those?
The Lime bikes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have. I did the birds for a while.
Yeah.
Or the Limes. And then I've read some interesting article about them, how they're basically... like the light, because of the fact that people are just banging the crap out of them all mm-hmm. over the place, just as you laid out in your example, the average.
Well, it was my elbow I banged by accident.
But just the actual devices get banged around.
Yes,
a lot,
I've heard this.
And thrown into garbage bins and all kinds of stuff. That the average life of one of these mm-hmm. is like 30 days.
Yeah.
And so. They lose. Not only does that sound extraordinarily wasteful,
yeah,
but they lose a huge amount of money on these things.
Yeah,
like, so they don't bring back the ROI on that, because the thing costs $500 or $600, something yes. like that, and they're only making maybe like $150, $200 on these things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why are they where are they making their money?
Exactly.
They're tracking you. That's what they're making your money. They're getting data about you.
Well, Google has that anyway.
I know, but then you can buy it. They can sell it for a discount price. Right? So it's like, oh, this is all about tracking. This is nothing to do with the convenience of rideshare.
Okay, so they know I go from the convention center to right. my Airbnb. That's an extremely marketable piece of information.
Yep.
Not...
Yep. But they may know other information about you as well as you move along.
Okay.
It's interesting. What was the New Yorker cartoon I saw the other day that was really funny? It was a guy that says, there's this great new app. All you do is you give it your social security number and it makes you look like a cat.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. I assume we're rolling then.
Yes, we're rolling.
Awesome.
We're rolling.
Zap. So they're starting with transportation this time, too. It was airplanes last time. Now it's,
is that what it was?
Yeah, we started.
Was it last year we did this,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a year ago.
So you see, every Thank year, SIGGRAPH, get together,
so
hang out.
We start with the topic. Let's keep this
schedule. Let me just put it before we start. Last time you felt you still had things you had to say. You still had some more anecdotes you want to share, which is great. So you went back to re-listen to the previous episode to see, okay, where did I stop off?
Yeah,
right?
And there was maybe a bit too many anecdotes in that one.
That's fine. But I think it's great that we do a year later. It's like, let's keep going, you know, episode two.
Yeah, episode two, exactly. So to keep to the format that we have established, topic number one was transportation. So this is done. Then we ran into music.
Music,
yes. Yep. I made a theme song last time,
yep.
which hilariously you by accident forgot to put into the actual episode.
I forgot, but I put it afterwards.
I know. But I just thought that was so funny because I told everybody, check out my super cool version when they released my episode, and it wasn't there.
Yep.
But I like when it's funny.
Yep.
I had a plan to make a new one for you. I haven't made it yet.
But we have
depending on time travel, like if I fly home.
So this is going to be at least 5 weeks away. At least.
Good.
At least.
Then we might just have heard my new version of the theme song or not.
So if you want to make another version of the theme song, you can. Maybe. Absolutely. I will let you do that.
If not, you can go to beatsymphony.com and listen to my old band from 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Or go to Spotify. We talked about...
Are you on Spotify?
That album I released 20 years ago, actually Glass Mastered, I decided to put it on Spotify.
Oh.
So right now it is. Master Zap, the Curvature of Space, it's called. And you'll all hate it, but it is what it is. Uh-huh. And back then when I released the CD...
Yep.
It was a regular CD, but it had data on it. So if you put it in a CD-ROM, I'll pop some HTML stuff,
yes.
and there's a bunch of real audio files. Everything of that is now available on Spotify as music, so we'll notice a distinct drop in audio quality by track 13, because that's what used to be the real audio files. Uh-huh. And I didn't even still have the originals, so I had to like unbake the real audio files into WAV files and turn them into the
wow.
CD. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
So you never had the original?
They're probably on some hard disk in a shelf somewhere mm-hmm. that I didn't have the energy to find.
You know, it was interesting that I found out the very hard way that I tried to archive a bunch of my content on Burn 'Em On CDs, and I found out that CDs only have a lifespan of about 7 years.
I have a bunch.
burned CDs.
I have a bunch of cool stuff on floppies. And... That's probably not great. I haven't tried. The problem was I was being so clever mm-hmm. that I used a particular backup software to pack it onto the floppy.
Which does not exist. Anymore.
Which, of course, does not exist.
Right.
But I was so insanely clever that the first floppy actually contains this software. Now, if this software runs on anything from this decade, I have no clue. But some super rainy day.
Because you're I should be smart. Because who knows if this backup software is still available. So I should put a copy on the floppy disk. So two things are problematic. Floppy disk?
Yes.
OS version.
Yes.
And hardware.
And this was in DOS, you know, back in the day.
That's what I assumed.
The thing I heard about this is that today's computers, even if you can run this in a DOS window, they're too fast, and the software is, I heard that the software is trying to make some measurement of the speed of your CPU by running a loop, mm-hmm. and it's so fast you get the division by zero and it crashes. So you probably have to run like in an emulated DOS box with the speed turned down or something. I still haven't
that
tried.
They must have that available.
Yeah.
But because I bet you there are people out there who have found like old floppy disks mm-hmm. of King's Quest or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they want to be able to play. And they're right. like, I would be, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but floppy disks can be surprisingly durable. I mean, I dug out my old Amiga computer.
Optical. Yeah, I mean, yes. I'm not no, magnetic.
But, yeah. Is, yeah. But I mean, I dug out my old Amiga to show the kids, and we put in some games. And a few of them were like, but many, it just worked, actually. And that's equivalently... Some of those are actually older than these floppies I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, some of those floppies do contain renderings and stuff I did in Ray Tracker back in the day. I talked about my old DOS Ray Tracer. So.
Yeah.
Last time we also talked about this little animation I did in Ray Tracker with the little ball bouncing back and forth between Luxor Jr. and the Red Stream bicycle.
Yep.
That is now available online for those who want. If you search for Ray Tracker and you end up on my webpage, you'll find it.
Okay.
Super awesome 30-frame animation.
30 frames of animation.
Done in AutoCAD and my render.
Nice.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yes. So those topics are done. And now we're going to talk about something that has to do with CG.
Do we? Because sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
But yes, I would love to talk about CG with you. I should mention... that it was very interesting, and I've told you, I told a story to you over dinner. But your podcast is actually extremely popular, and I'm like, well, I know it was a fun subject, but it was like the numbers were higher than expected and continue to be high, and I'm like, what? And deciphering the web popularity is interesting, like. What's going on? So it's like, okay, well, I know Zap's pretty cool. He's got a good presence on the internet, et cetera, et cetera. Then as I started figured it out, which is the topic is, you and I got into a big debate about PBR during
I'm
that.
I'm sure it was a debate by then. Well, it was a debate at Total Chaos over drinks.
Yes.
And we were actually much more in agreement, really, by the time we recorded.
Right.
Yes.
And we already knew we were going to talk about this. So I basically said, all right, we're going to talk about PBR. My biggest problem with PBR is the term metalness.
Yes.
Which you talked me off the ledge about it.
Yes.
Right? But
I did.
It was good for me because I had just been starting to write a blog article about metalness.
Yes.
And going through the podcast gave me all the information I needed to talk about metalness. At which point I realized, because we looked at some analytics and realized like, oh, the metalness blog post I wrote is one of the top blog posts of all of chaosgroup.com, right? And chaosgroup.com is actually fairly popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh. And then I realized that the link to our podcast was on the bottom of the blog post. And then I was like, huh, that's
right.
Cool.
Except the link to the blog post is at the bottom of our podcast. So what's the cause and effect here?
Yes, it is. it is definitely an infinite loop situation. But then I realized, huh, that's pretty cool. And so I was like, I wonder what happens when I search metalness on Google. And the number one thing that comes up is that blog post.
Interesting.
Yep. And then I tried it in an incognito window, and then I had Vlado try it.
You had Vlado try it.
I was like, check it out. And he goes, huh, that's pretty cool. I was like, yes. And he says, so there's a couple other blog posts that have been very successful in that. And one is, for example, you remember I wrote one about bias versus unbiased rendering.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not only does my if I look up bias versus unbiased, that blog post comes up, fairly high, and anything else is blog other people that wrote blog posts that reference back to mm-hmm. my blog post. I was like, yeah. that's cool.
Nice.
Anyway, it's cool. So I'm challenging us, my friend, to come up with some good subjects that's going to really deliver a good SEO
for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we have to find some good keywords.
Right.
Good keywords.
So let's talk about what I did Wednesday morning.
What did you do Wednesday morning?
I visited my pals at Corridor Digital.
Corridor Digital.
Yes.
Oh, and you made some little introduction emails or cards.
Yeah. So if you don't know, for the listeners, wonder who the heck is Corridor Digital. It started out with two guys, Sam and Nico, who wanted to make little visual effects YouTube videos. And they, like almost 10 years ago, they started. And actually, there's another guy known, Freddie Wong, known as Freddie W. Mm-hmm. Although nowadays his channel is called Rocket Jump. They were actually working together in the beginning. So Sam and Nico were kind of doing effects for Freddie in some of his early videos. And a lot like, you know, gun effects. They were doing like fights with muscle flashes. They have an early video, which is a gun battle, except every bullet hit sprouts flowers. So there's flowers growing.
That.
Yeah, you remember this one, right? And there's a whole bunch of stuff from the early days. And there's, by the way, a funny anecdote.
These guys were not involved in the 405, the movie. Remember that
No, yes, I remember that. No, they were not.
Those were Lightwave guys, I think.
Yeah, they were Lightwave guys, yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, speaking of... Okay, yeah. I'm going to throw in an anecdote. Sorry, guys.
Keep going.
There's a YouTube channel called Epic Mealtime. You might have heard about it. They do insane cooking.
Okay.
So there's the big guy named Harvey, who's like the front face of Epic Mealtime.
Mm-hmm.
So Freddie Wong did a visual effects video with him called Epic VFX Time, where it's everything like just raining guns from the sky. And it's rained guns from the sky.
Right.
So Sam and Nico were actually the guys making the effects for this video.
Right.
So you can find a behind-the-scenes video about how they're sitting there making the effects.
Right.
And you can see Sam, Nico, Freddie, and Brandon, which is a guy that works with Freddie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Nico is rendering something, trying to explain, be all like, yes, here, I'm going to explain how we render this to get this into. And Freddie is kind of ribbing him. I love when you try to do the authoritarian voice, Nico. It sounds so professional.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hits render and everything goes tits up. It breaks.
Right.
And Freddie goes, what did you do to my render? There's a giant egg in the middle of my scene. There shouldn't be an egg in there. What have you done to rendering? And Nico's like, I don't know. And Brandon goes, Zap would know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And Freddie goes like, so who's this Zap guy? And like, oh, Zap is the guy who makes Mental Ray, which is totally not true, but is what they said.
Right.
Oh, is he like a famous guy in the 3D world? Oh, yeah, Zap is like super famous.
Uh-huh.
So right about how famous is he? Well, it's like, you know, Brad Pitt or George Clooney.
Yeah.
So I've been living off that for 10 years now, that apparently I'm the George Clooney of computer.
The George Clooney of...
Yeah, well, actually, I'd rather pick Brad Pitt if I may, but whatever. Yeah. So that's probably the cause your podcast has so many downloads.
I do call Paul Dubevic the Michael Jordan of CG lighting.
Mm. Yeah. I'll take the Brad Pitt. Anyway, so these guys, I've known them for a while. When I am in L.A., I try to get to like visit them, at least say hi.
Yeah.
The last time was a Sigroff a few years ago, and I kind of showed up and they were in the middle of preparing a shoot with an actual like pirate ship out in the ocean. They were like packing stuff. So I was like, hi Sap, we're kind of busy. So we're like shaking hands and I go back home again.
Sure.
So they have grown from making 10 years ago little tiny videos to bigger stuff, and they have grown a lot, and they do so much stuff. The latest stuff, if you've seen the Boston Dynamics where the robot fights back kind of thing.
There's a parody of those Boston Dynamics videos where they basically made a CG version of a robot.
Yeah, they abused the robot.
But they abuse it. They like hit it with a baseball bat and kick it downstairs.
They shoot it with a gun.
And then eventually the robot rebels.
Robot fights back,
Fights back.
And they were actually speaking in the X-Sense booth because we're using the X-Sense motion capture suit. So they were here at Sigroff speaking there. So it was kind of fun. So anyway, I decided to visit them. And for some reason, they also decided to start a guillotine channel because why not, right? You built a giant guillotine, you shop stuff.
Right.
And apparently this morning they decided to shoot something with the guillotine. And when you shoot with a guillotine, you want to do it in slow-mo. So
they're into cutting-edge technology.
Oh, badoom, man. So, of course, they invited the slow-mo guys.
Right.
Yeah, so Gav from the slow-mo guys was there. And the whole crew was there. So I was kind of... I had a little chat with them, but then I was just kind of just a fly on the wall to see how they operate.
Sure.
Which is actually kind of impressive with how few they are. Like, they were literally carrying around the guillotine while Peter, one of the guys, was sitting in the middle of the room on a computer, and I watched him do like 3 effects shots while the other guys was just doing other shit around them. He was just super focused doing for like their next video.
Right.
The same morning, they had released the video where they improve the muscle flashes in the John Wick shootout scene, because so they added some muscle flashes. You guys should watch that, because they do an improvement of that, and then they take a different version where this Peter guy say, well, I did my own version, and that thing is freaking hilarious, because he took it not just over the top. If there ever was a top, there's like no, this is like the different planet. Sure. It's so insane. By lunchtime, that video had 500,000 views. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
so it was an interesting morning.
So yeah, their YouTube channel is called The Corridor Crew.
Yeah, well, actually, they have four.
They have four channels.
Corridor is the one where they post the actual videos, the finished, the one like the normal people are supposed to watch.
Right.
Then Corridor Crew is the like behind the scenes channel.
Right.
Where they post like how we did it, and actually recently
a lot of critiquing stuff.
Yeah, yeah, they have done like VFX artists react to.
Right.
But, and they actually took this. The famous horrible bad CG of The Rock from the Scorpion King.
Yes, and Dwayne Johnson and fixed him. That was actually a really good one.
Yeah, so they used deep fake to do that. They deep faked Tom Cruise.
Yep.
And they deep faked
Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Which both pretty good.
Yeah.
And they do all sorts of stuff. And I'm both kind of envious and not of these guys, because they get to have a lot of fun, obviously. Mm-hmm. But imagine, like, the Corridor Crew channel is a video every other day.
Yeah.
Right? And the Effects channel is at least 2 weeks between videos, maybe.
Right.
Which is a video full of... There's always some joke. I mean, they're kind of jokes. I mean, they're comedy channels. But with visual effects.
What I find interesting about it is they're basically like a visual effects reality show.
The Crew channel is, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So... So I've had this thing, and you listen to this podcast. So I've had this thing where I get frustrated with the general public that is pissing on VFX or CG specifically, right?
Yeah.
It's all done with CGI. That's why the movie's crap, which is not true, and I've argued that. So I've tried to, like, you know, I had a thing for a while. I was doing hashtag respect VFX, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, we need more people in the general public to see this. But these guys have 6 million followers, mm-hmm. right? They have, you know, each video they put out, like you said, it like gets at least 1 million hits.
Mm-hmm.
So they are a good channel to try to pass that message along, which I think they do.
They do. I mean, they have done critiquing bad CGI, and they do make a point of saying they're not great. Obviously not critiquing CGI, but the bad one. I mean, there's good and bad CGI, so well, critique the bad one.
I'd love to find a way to get together with them and see if we can work together to get the common message out or whatever it is, or just have fun.
Yeah.
Just have fun. So anyway, the good thing is that they're in LA, which is hilarious that I didn't even realize that. But because I just watched their videos, I was like, these guys got to be in LA. I assumed they were out here in LA or Vancouver, but...
Yeah, they're down on Hunter Street.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. Well, that's good. That was fun.
I dropped your name in their hat. So
good. And I have, you gave me one of their business cards.
Yes.
So I'm going to email them more specifically, which is cool. Which is cool. Let's see. What else were we talking about? Okay. Oh, SEO stuff. Okay. Now let's start. That's cool that we talked about the visual effects and the Corridor Crew stuff. What about stuff that you've been working on, my friend?
Right. So this year, some actual content. So this year, I actually was presenting at the OSL Birds of a Feather, as I did last year. And I also been the BOF. And this year,
than BOOF, which is Birds Under a Feather.
Okay. It's also a French VFX house, but that's a different story. The work we've been showing off is, I also been in the booth actually showing off some of that in the
Autodesk. Oh, at the Autodesk booth?
Yeah, at the Autodesk booth. So it's mainly the stuff we've done with improving the Max viewport lately,
uh-huh.
and the fact that we have managed to get OSL shaders to actually run in the real-time viewport.
Right.
Which is, I'm pretty proud of that work, honestly. And awesome. Because OSL as a language is, it was written and intended for software renderers. That like it was, that was the original use case.
Right.
Like, when Larry Gritt started it with
Okay, let's go through a little history of OSL so people will have a better idea.
So it was Larry Gritt's inside of Sony Pictures Imageworks. They basically decided to make a shading language that was more geared towards modern kind of path tracy style rendering, as opposed to like the old RenderMan shading language, which was much more about the old school kind of tricks and, you know, this kind of stuff. So the idea was to take basically shading out of the shading language because this is the job of the renderer.
I think he started that when I was at Sony because I was at Sony 2005 or so.
I'm a little hazy on the early history there and the internal history, but eventually, basically, he put it on GitHub.
Yeah,
basically,
I made it open source.
I made it open source,
which is why it's open shading language now.
Right. It was probably called something else before. I'm guessing. I don't know. Anyway, so people started using it and building it into their renderers and finding it, you know, interesting and cool. And for Max 2019, so that's like 2 years ago, we decided we wanted to try to put it into Max because we knew we had Arnold and Arnold was going to support OSL, but we wanted to make the OSL support in Max more across the board for like everything. So we built OSL like into the core of Max itself so that any renderer that just used the classic Max C++ API for running shaders, which you do, like V-Ray CPU does that, it gets our OSL for free. The renderer doesn't have to do a single thing.
Sure.
If you take a renderer like Arnold, which actually translates everything, but we just send over the OSL source code and the Arnold
and then
runs
it plugs it into it.
It plugs it in, it works exactly the same.
Right.
And if you have a renderer like V-Ray GPU, which is actually also translated. I heard Vlado saying it's sold now.
It's working
because last year
he showed it at SIGGRAPH.
Right.
Yeah.
So because this is the huge difference between last year and this year. Last year I said, you know, OSL on a GPU isn't kind of really there, and this year it is. I mean, NVIDIA has been working on the optics backend, a whole bunch of, you know, ProRender has something. I think I heard Jules say from Otoy say there was something. I haven't seen this, so maybe I'm misremembering. Like OSL on GPU, totally calming. So that is nice. And what we did in Max was also to try to get the OSL to work in our real-time viewport, which is basically a DirectX thing, which has the shaders in there in HLSL. So what we figured out a way to do is basically we take the OSL code, we compile it through the OSL compiler, and that generates something called an OSO file. And the OSO file looks kind of like assembly language. There's little like instructions and parameters.
Okay.
And there's only 151 different instructions. That's it. Doesn't matter.
Pretty simple.
It's pretty simple. So we basically implemented a little snippet of HLSL for each of these 151 OSL operations or whatever you call them. And we have a thing that assembles the shader together, injects it into viewport, and just run it.
Okay.
We can't support everything. There's stuff like dictionary lookups and point cloud lookups in the OSL that we're not really using, so we just skip those.
All
but for most normal stuff like textures, multiply, whatever. So
BRDFs and all,
all this stuff. Yeah. Like, well, actually, we intentionally don't do the BRDFs in OSL for reasons we can discuss later.
Okay.
We use OSL solely as a texturing language, as this is highly intentional. This works really well, and we get a really nice performance. And I was showing this off at the BOF, for instance, because you can like animate the texture, and they animate like completely in real time. And it's funny because at the end of last podcast, I was actually mentioned that we were going to do this, and now we have done this.
Awesome.
And when we were going, I said last time, I'm not sure if this is like worth it because these days you can just run the renderer, and why not just render?
Right.
And now when I see it working, I think it actually is and was worth it, because even if you switch to like the renderer and try to like render it in real time, it kind of almost doesn't matter how quick your render is to update. You always get this the first, it's a little grainy and it updates and whatever. So you get this kind of grainy version of it compared to what we get in our viewport, which is just the full effect running completely in real time. So one thing I did last year. I'm really into fractals and Mandelbrots, and it turns out many of us computer graphics geeks are into fractals, and Larry too is into fractals.
Yeah.
So I figured out, I saw some other video about fractals. It turns out the classic Mandelbrot set we all know and love mm-hmm. can actually be done in three dimensions, or even actually four dimensions.
Sure.
But three is pretty easy to do.
Sure.
And I did that, and I made this a volume shader, and I rendered it out in Arnold, and I made kind of an animation where you fly through this 3D thing, and you fly like through the whole thing, and you get this weird bullet-looking shape, and the classical Mandelbrot is like the middle slice of this,
yeah.
And it gets these twirly things, and it's very interesting how the outside of this shape is very small, and all the weird stuff is like on the inside.
Or on the edges.
And so I made this fly through this, and this took like a 30 seconds to a minute to frame to render, and right. I did some really low settings, so it's kind of grainy and crappy animation. And then when we have finished all this work for the viewport, I basically loaded up this Mandelbrot, and then I built in like the ray marching into the shader itself, so uh-huh. It wasn't really volume rendering, I was just faking it.
Right.
And I compiled it for the viewport, and you can do this completely in real time. Even though it's like 100 slices of a Mandelbrot set with 500 iterations for each freaking slice, it's just 50 frames per second.
And that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. You know, it could be useful to something.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, so I do want to bring up a couple things, because obviously, as you know, people that listen to this podcast, some of them are very technically savvy, you know, TDs, et cetera, that know exactly what a shading language is and how to write one, et cetera, et cetera. But let's say you're not that person. Let's say you're a freelancer of some kind. You're working, you know, doing architecture visualization, and you're thinking, well, let me know more. What is this OSL thing, and how can I actually write a shader?
Mm-hmm.
What do I do? What are kind of shaders I can write? So let's start with that idea.
Well, first of all, the way we did it in Max, like I said, intentionally, OSL in Max is only for texturing, not for the materials. There is such a thing in OSL called closures. You can think of them as the BRDFs.
Okay.
But the problem with that is that every renderer has their own.
Okay.
It's one of those cases, this great thing with standards, there's so many to choose from, right? Everything that is not closures in OSL is completely standardized, and every renderer does it the same.
Right.
But when you get to the closures, well, V-Ray has a set, Arnold has a set, you know, SPI's internal render has a set. So to me, that kind of basically kills it. So the solution we have come up with from the Max standpoint is that we intentionally took everything that has to do with materials and did not support that in OSL. And then we have this material which we in Max call the physical material. Mm-hmm. And you basically pipe everything.
The PBR material.
You pipe everything to that. And this material is also something we're actually pushing for as a standard, though under a different name. You will hear the name Autodesk Standard Surface.
Okay.
And this has been talked about at SIGGRAPH a bunch, how we want to, there's a white paper out, and we're pushing for this as a standard. It's actually is already included in Material X as one of the like PBR shaders that kind of comes with Material X.
Okay.
And it's a thing we're pushing, but it's essentially it's almost exactly the same as the physical. There's some tiny,
okay,
almost insignificant difference. But say physical material is the grandfather and standard surface is the child, basically.
Okay.
But they're extremely similar. So we tried to do this so the shading, the actual like material side of thing we do outside of OSL. We only use OSL for building procedural textures, like wood. You can do like procedural wood and all sorts of fun stuff.
Okay.
And what was the question? Was there a question?
Well, imagine. Imagine you're like, it's like, okay.
Right.
Well, is there a library I can get?
Yes. So okay.
Do I do with it? What am I making? You were clear. Okay. So you were mainly focused on textures.
Yes.
So let's say you want to make a wood.
Yes. So let me.
Procedural wood.
First of all, the way it is in Max, it ships with 115 shaders out of the box.
Okay.
These show up.
These are example shaders, I'm assuming.
Well,
they're useful.
Yeah, they're useful. But you can think of them as examples if you want. That is kind of the beauty.
But they're written in a language that you can open it up and look at it in a.
This is the thing, right? So if you don't care about what OSL even is, you can just think of it. I just got 150 new shaders. It happened to be under a little tab that says OSL.
Right.
But you don't have to care about that. You just use them as any other thing in Max, whatever. Yep. No difference. And then you just use them and you're happy. Mm-hmm. The second way you can use it is like, oh, you Google cool OSL shaders in Google and you found a bunch of GitHubs with OSL shaders. You can just download them. And then there is something called just the OSL map, which is kind of the blank slate OSL thing in Max. You drop that in. It has a load button. You pick one of those files you just downloaded, and the node then like magically morphs into the inputs and outputs that this shader had. And then now you just use it as any other shader, and you don't even have to care that it's OSL again. And the cool thing is that the actual source code gets embedded in your Max file. So if I send the file to you, you automatically have the shader.
You don't need to have the reference.
You never have to have anything like, oh, have you installed the Superwood version 12 because I'm using it. Doesn't matter. I send you the file. You get Superwood version 12 because it's in my file.
But because the OSL shader itself is actually quite simple.
Yeah, it's just a little text.
Right.
It's not much. And since the storage system in Max deduplicates, if the same string is in many places, it's actually only stored once, so it doesn't really waste a bunch of space.
Nice.
So then you have the third way where you can just start also again from the OSL map. And there's a built-in editor to just open it up and you start typing your code. And you can do it right in Max.
You can
write in Max.
And you can see it happening?
You can see it happening live. Like you just hit compile, even compiles it live down to the viewport shading. I was actually showing off this. I'm a fan of sushi, as you know.
Yeah.
So of course I written a sushi shader.
Right.
Don't tell him when it's actually a modified wood shader.
Okay. I could see that. Yeah.
I mean, salmon growing and tree rings is kind of similar.
Yeah.
So I kind of demonstrate this on the show floor. Here's a completely custom shader that was completely custom written for this particular scene to render this particular salmon. Mm-hmm. And it's showing up nicely in the render. It showed up nicely in the viewport. And I literally open up the source code, hit the edit button, go in and type in a line of code. So I basically multiply the color by red. I hit compile and now it's red in the viewport and it's red in the rendering.
Right.
And it just works basically. And it's really, really nice. So you can basically use it as a development environment for shaders. And basically, you don't need to deploy anything anywhere because the shader is in your scene. But if you do want to deploy them, there's a way to just drop them in a special folder. So next time you launch Max, you have a new thing in your OSL category, the thing you just made, you know.
Sure.
And then you could deploy it across your studio so everybody who wants the Salmon version 12 can have Salmon version 12 with the drag and drop.
Nice.
But you could even do it, I mean, since, again, the code is embedded, you can just make a standard Max material library with whatever and just pass that around because it contains the code anyway.
Right.
So that's just another way to do it.
Nice.
So I'm pretty proud of what we've done there, and it's working really well, actually. And it works great in V-Ray, Corona, and Arnold. Even Max Scanline does it.
Nice.
And even, since we'd made it now work in the viewport, you know, Max has a renderer called Quicksilver. But many people don't even know what that is.
I don't know what that is.
So Quicksilver is literally the viewport just wrapped as a renderer. So it's exactly the same code as the viewport.
Yeah.
It just runs the same thing. So it's kind of an OpenGL style rasterized.
It's a way to do like playblasts.
Playblast, right. Yeah. So in that Max, there's actually two ways to make a playblast. You have a grab viewport animation on one menu that literally just runs the viewports and captures the frames.
It's a screen capture.
It's basically a screen capture, right?
Right.
But you could almost just as well just render it in Quicksilver. That's kind of the same thing.
But isn't it in Quicksilver because it's... You're not just don't care about its real-time performance. You can just sacrifice a little bit to get a slightly better quality.
Yes, because if you're in Quicksilver has a few extra bells and whistles. It has kind of a GI implementation. It can do cube map reflections between things and a few extra things you can do. Plus, you get it like more wrapped as a renderer, so you get more like where do I save the file and these kind of things. It's more, you can even throw it off to your back burner and render it somewhere else or whatever.
Okay.
But just so people... But it's actually the quote unquote renderer is exactly the same as the Max viewport.
Nice.
So That the fact that we supported OSL in the viewport actually made Quicksilver a lot more useful.
Because right.
In the past, it only really supported a few simple maps and stuff, and
sure.
It was very limited.
Right.
And now suddenly, it's actually useful to do stuff.
Nice.
And you could probably get away with only... because one thing we did in the last drop of Max, 2020 update 2, we did one important update. One part that was missing in the Max viewport mm-hmm. was display of roughness properly.
Mm.
So everything looked too shiny in the viewport compared to the renderer.
Ah.
Now we do roughness in the viewport.
Okay.
So I've been standing on the show floor most of the day and having two side-by-side things.
Yeah.
One is like an Arnold rendering and one is the viewport, and people basically have to guess which is which. And in most cases, they think the viewport is the rendering.
Right.
And then I just spin it around in real time and said wrong.
Right.
So it looks, it's looking pretty cool.
Cool. Cool. Well, speaking of on the show floor,
yes.
How was your SIGGRAPH?
My SIGGRAPH was pretty interesting. A lot of meetings and top secret things I can't tell you because then I have to kill you.
Yeah.
Actually, I would have to kill the entire audience. And there's a lot of work, so I won't mention
right.
any of that. But there were some interesting discussions behind the scene. Otherwise, looking around, I really love the Geek Bar version where you can basically sit down and instead of have to run between the rooms,
mm-hmm.
you get there's this giant screen with like 8 displays and you get this little listening device and you just can flip through the channels. So when one guy gets...
I never actually went to the Geek Bar.
Yeah, no, it's great actually. Although... A few years ago, the Geek Bar was an actual bar. I mean, they were actually serving drinks.
Yeah.
Now, I think you can get fruit juice and protein shakes and stuff like that.
That's not going to work.
Well,
just kidding. I'm kidding. Anyway, go ahead. It sounds yeah. like the content was really cool.
The content is good. So I was flipping. I actually landed. The cool thing is that I have this idea of what I maybe want to see as the talks. And of course, you go to the papers fast forward and all that stuff before, so you have a feeling for what papers are interesting. Mm-hmm. But I felt myself actually flipping to like other things. I ended up on a guy having a really nice kind of tutorial about machine learning and neural networks and all this kind of stuff.
I don't think I saw a single talk that did not have machine learning in it.
Oh, yeah, it's the buzzword of today.
So, yeah.
Although someone clever once said to me that machine learning really is just fetishizing matrix multiply. Which is kind of true, because that's all it really is in the back. I'm joking. It's a
yeah.
joke, of course. But it's kind of like, you know, if you want to be popular as a company these days and you want your stocks to go up, you have to say blockchain, right? It's like deep learning in
okay.
CG, then it's
well,
amazing.
Actually, I will tell you this. They didn't actually just throw out the machine. Okay. I didn't go to any production talks.
Right.
I actually honestly did not go. I went to actual papers, right.
right,
and technical stuff. So those guys weren't just willy-nilly throwing around
no,
the terms, because they would have gotten roasted by people because everyone knows that they're not doing that. But they did use – they basically, like all of them, used some kind of a neural network to solve – the things that were going on.
I mean, obviously, I'm joking a bit, but the guy who makes a blockchain neural network, God knows.
It's like, yes, that would be hilarious. It's just like my issue with the overuse of the term organic for foods.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
this is organic salt, but it's a mineral. Okay.
Yeah, organic blockchain deep learning.
Deep learning.
We have something here.
Yeah.
Let's start a company together.
Yeah. farm to plate. Farm to plate deep learning. Okay. Well, but I want to get into that. Like, what are your thoughts about deep learning or machine learning or whatever you want to talk about?
Well, I find it really fascinating on a lot of levels. First of all, one of my big interests, and we touched on this last time, is like how we see things,
mm-hmm.
like how the human visual subsystem works in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had a talk with the guy who did, oh, I'm blanking on the movie now. Not Into the Spider-Verse. The Alita. That was
Battle Angel.
Battle Angel, right. Because I saw the two last production sessions last night.
Yeah.
There was Alita and then it was... So there was a lot of talk about the facial stuff and how they were doing... I don't know how much it was deep learning, but it was a lot of the tracking and stuff. And I just got into a discussion with him afterwards about this whole thing, about how we see faces. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the uncanny valley and all these kind of things.
Yep.
And I showed him there's this illusion. You can Google distorted faces illusion, which I think is a very enlightening thing. Because all that is, there's a cross in the middle of the screen, and then there's pictures of celebrities on each side, and it starts flipping through the celebrities. And all you have to do is to look in the middle. And what happens is that your brain is trying to compute these quickly flipping around celebrities, mm-hmm. and the features start to get distorted. The eyes get bigger, the noses get thinner, the faces get more and more square. Then you actually look at them. There's nothing wrong with them. It's your brain doing this. Mm. And what is so interesting, if you see in the like the Google Deep Dream stuff, it looks just like that.
Hmm.
And this is our brain doing it, and Google has computers doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of looks exactly the same. And actually, I had a different experience on drugs, but in a hospital, so it's okay.
Yeah.
But
I needed painkillers.
I needed some serious painkillers.
Uh-huh.
And I started to see stuff in the edge of my vision. I kid you not, I had small animations, 32 by 32 pixels,
okay.
that was looping around in a grid in the edge of my vision.
Right.
And this also looked like something coming out of deep dream. So I just feel... they're onto something which is really similar to how our brain works.
Okay.
And I don't know what, I don't know how. And that's the scary part. Many people that do these, you throw 4011 layers at some convolution network and boom, it recognizes cats. And like, nobody really knows exactly how, but it works. I mean, they know in theory.
They
I mean, you know... abstractly how it works.
I mean, not concretely.
There's just a lot of data, and a lot of data just makes it work.
But the thing that is, I think, important for people to realize about all of these techniques is that they're not absolutes. They're the probabilistic.
Yes.
It is the most probable solution that's out there, mm-hmm. but there's no way to prove that it is the truth.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you can, like... you know, a lot of it's like a computer making an educated guess.
Yes.
And that's
literally what it is.
That's literally what it is.
Like,
which means that basically it only knows things based on things that have already.
Yes.
That it already so happened.
It needs examples to draw from. And then you can untangle from these examples other stuff. Actually, this is part of the tutorial I saw yesterday, which was good because it kind of made me understand how these things work. One of the real tricks with the deep learning stuff is you have you start like with some random values,
mm-hmm.
and you want to go somewhere, and you have some kind of mathematical function describing kind of where you want to go to towards. And the whole trick with the way deep learning network works is that all the math in it comes with all the derivative values, and the derivative values will then be quote-unquote pointing in the direction where you want to go.
Okay.
So you do something called gradient descent, mm-hmm. which means you basically walk in the direction where the derivatives are pointing, and ideally you will end up in a lowest point, which is like one of the optimal points for getting to where you want to go.
Right.
But what you can then do is to do basic gradient ascent. So you start with the noise and go basically the up. That's how you resynthesize images and get like you have done gradient descents on a bunch of cats, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you have figured out what kind of filter layers makes it recognize cats.
Right.
Then you use that the other way, and now you can synthesize cats, basically.
Right.
And also this, like, there's the concept of style transfer, because it tends to be like the first few layers in the network are stuff like how how lines go and how textures go and stuff. And the deeper you get, it gets more and more abstract. So it's more the shapes and overall shapes of stuff. So if you can apply this gradient descent from the lower level for like the shapes and the higher level for like the textures, you can do like a style transfer to, you have a photo, but you can make it look like, you know, Van Gogh has painted it or whatever, and this kind of stuff. And it's, I think it's fascinating, but it's also so much randomness. It's extremely difficult to like control and make it do exactly what you want, I guess, because if you start from randomness, you'll get, you know, randomness. But I mean, it's really interesting, and it's like I was watching that talk, and be fun if I could go to like a deserted island and just play with machine learning for a year, but I don't think I can. Yeah. I have other things to do, unfortunately.
But there is so many interesting applications. I mean, obviously, like all these different talks, and I saw there's a level that you could use machine learning to do it.
Yeah.
That is an interesting way to solve the problem.
And I mean, one thing that to me sound like an obvious thing to play with, and for sure someone has already done it or is in the middle of doing it. Mm-hmm. But we're back to our materials. Like, we have a real object. We put it under some known lighting, and we just take a picture of it and let, hey, computer, figure out, you know, what this material, what's the
interesting
setting.
You said that, because I saw basically something, I mean, not exactly that, but could go to that.
Right.
Basically, this guy, it was an image synthesis series of talks. And it was this guy who basically created a significantly cheaper light stage, in a sense, right? Where it basically only uses six images and like two lighting conditions or one lighting condition or whatever.
Right.
But based on that information, could interpolate all the other necessary information and say, based on, let's interpolate all the in-between states of everything else,
right,
and derives not just a model, but also a basic shader and specular values and a scan of this.
And I also think this is a thing that could help us a lot with actually trying to model human faces. Although all this deep fakery stuff also, when you, like the corridor guys put Tom Cruise's face on someone, there's nothing 3D involved in that.
No, it's a morph.
It's a morph. It's a,
it's like, it is, dude, it's back to like, what was it? Elastic reality. It's basically elastic reality that's being run by a smarter algorithm.
Right. But I think also this could be, because I see all these digital doubles. So we have the perfect example of Tarkin from Rogue One, right?
Yes.
And there's varying opinions of if that's successful or not. In my opinion, it's not successful.
Sure.
Not knocking the guys who did it in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
But I think it comes back to that face illusion that we can't see faces objectively. I think our brain makes kind of a caricature before it even hits us. So when I'm looking at you, I'm not objectively seeing you. I'm actually seeing a caricature of you, because my brain does that.
I am a caricature. So
we can do the everything has Fresnel man, you know, like with the cape and everything. Yeah. So every time I try to draw you, I will invariably drawing a caricature. And that's why also we recognize caricatures, even though they are stylized versions of people, we can still
recognize who that is.
If we actually saw stuff objectively, we wouldn't understand caricatures. Mm. And that's where I feel most digital doubles that are touched by a human have turned somehow into like a caricature. I think that's what happened with Tarkin in, it looks like the caricature version. Mm. Not as bad as those spitting image dolls they used to do, but it's a little bit in that direction. Uh-huh. Again, no offense in any way to, I know Hal Hickel and his guys worked on this.
Yeah.
They worked their butts off. But I just think it's fundamentally a hard problem for us to solve. And I think maybe if you point to machine learning, which doesn't have these biases that we have, add a face and tell it to make a model of it, I actually think it will make something more accurate than what a human would do.
Okay, so that was really the besides the machine learning part of it, that was really the motivation behind the WikiHuman project, is remove as much subjectivity
yes.
into it and keep as much objectivity. And I think that's the problem that I have. I remember specifically, I remember talking about this at DD, when I would see people, they're handed all this data from, ICT scans or whatever it was, and they would just, the artist would start playing with the data, not realizing the implications of this is something you should mess with or not mess with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there shouldn't be, like, they were like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep, I was like, oh, that doesn't look right. And then you're like, bang, go too far left, too far right. And it just becomes like, whoa. Overreaction. Because the problem is, when something doesn't look as good, especially faces, you have an emotional reaction.
Yes.
But and since tends
can't
to overcorrect
see it objectively,
it. Yeah.
We don't know what to fix. That
right.
is like the key. We see this is not right, but I have no clue what to fix.
Right.
And even I think it was even Hal Hickel himself who said that to me. He showed the face to 10 people and he got 10 different notes.
Oh, I guarantee. I saw that all the time.
Yeah. And so I think there's something
it's the eyes.
Fundamental.
No, it's the nose.
Exactly.
Have you seen his cheek? The forehead's all wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think this is such a fundamental problem for us humans. But we also we have a blind spot to the problem itself. We don't realize we have the problem, which is part of the problem.
Yeah, we are actually part of the problem.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just replace us all by robots and it will...
Doesn't matter.
Just let the machines take
over. What was it? We were talking about it on some other podcast about there's a mental condition which does not... You cannot recognize faces.
Oh, yes. It has a long name of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is very challenging.
Yes.
You can imagine to live life without being able to recognize a face.
But I mean, think about it. I mean, if you see a bunch of different photos of horses, can you tell those apart?
I know.
No, because you were not evolved to recognize the difference in faces. They're probably as different as all the human faces around you.
Right.
But we are just not tuned to those differences.
I know.
Even a bunch of cats that can have barely obvious different patternings, it's not what we pick up on. We see, oh, that's
yes, but
cat.
Okay, yeah.
Orange
yeah,
cat.
Yeah, we still recognize different cats because they have variations in them.
Yes.
I've always thought about this, Abel. I wonder your thoughts are. Wild animals tend to look extremely similar to us. So like all cheetahs
or
look the same.
Or do they?
Well, all cheetahs tend to look very similar. Foxes do as well. Domesticated animals, cows, dogs. Dogs look very different from each other. Different sizes, different ear slits. And then cats can be very different as well. So anytime you domesticate guinea pigs, rabbits, domestic rabbits, wild rabbits, they all look the same. There's no way you can't say that they don't look the same. I'm sure they recognize each other differently, but foxes all look very similar. Horses, you can start to see differences because of their colorations and their patterns.
Honestly, that's the part where I'm not so sure, honestly. Could it be that those wild foxes that we think all look alike are actually looking really different to each other, but
I'm sure they
simply
do look
not tuned to see it?
I'm sure they do, or maybe there's something else.
It seems that they are objectively more similar, but I doubt my own visual subsystem
There's actually been like there's certain animals that went from wild to domesticated, and within not that many generations, their patterns and looks, their variations grew immensely.
Yes,
it's not like we evolved to see their differences.
No, but we affected their evolutions by doing applying selection pressure on our preferences.
Sure.
So, of course, that would emphasize differences that we like.
Right.
So, I like the big floppy ears, so I want to breed those puppies that have floppy ears, and then other guys want something else. So
sure.
I think that is, we're affecting it in that way.
I agree. I think it's interesting to think about that whole evolution and similarity. We had this discussion, and interesting, I remember now where it was. It was actually on my Martini Giant podcast, where it was with my son who was the guest on it, and he was frustrated with the fact that, why is it that we all look different, but the aliens all look the same?
Yes. I heard that, and I was just thinking, maybe they don't look all the same, but we don't pick up on it.
That's what I argued with him as well. Right.
But on the other hand, going back to the
digital humans,
the domesticated animals. Could it also be that the reason that we chose certain animals to domesticate was that we find them to have more of a personality? So maybe they were more to us, looked more.
That's different. That's for pets, right?
Yeah, for pets maybe. So I don't know. I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. Well, technically the egg, but never mind.
The egg didn't. Where did the egg come from?
Something that was not a chicken, by definition. But it contained a chicken. And there comes the chicken from the egg.
Evolutionary speaking, you are 100% correct.
Of course I am. I'm always right. You know this, Chris.
Something that was just before a chicken. That was not a chicken yet.
That was not a chicken.
It's a good argument. Technically the chicken. Yes, well, that's fascinating. We've gone a little off topic. Sorry about that.
Right. CG Garage was what it was called. Well, but, you know, it's machine learning we're talking about. And yes. So how do we bring this train wreck home?
There's some other subjects you want to talk about. What else?
Was there? Let me see. I made a list even.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
Better prepared than the host.
Yeah, but I can't read my own handwriting.
You need your monocle?
I might need my monocle, yeah.
Like my monocle? For those listening, Zap literally has a monocle hanging from his
I do indeed.
From his neck, and he looks at things through a monocle like an evil one percenter.
While
I said good day.
I'd say, sir. I challenge thee to a duel. Render versus render in the morning. Actually, you know, I used to... now we're getting really into the weeds. It started as a joke at the Mental Images Party a million years ago when Steve Wortley, who writes the F-prime render,
Available on Lightwave.
He's a tiny little nice guy, and I was joking and say we're going to decide which render is best, Mental Ray or F-prime, through arm wrestling. So I arm wrestled him, and I'm slightly larger than he is, so I won. Mm-hmm. This was a very unfortunate precedent to set, because then I arm wrestled Vlado a little later.
You did?
And I did. And let's just say I did not win.
No.
Vlado is
a... Did Vlado really accept a challenge to arm wrestle? Because he doesn't seem like someone who would want to arm wrestle.
No, he didn't have much
choice. He didn't have much choice, but he beat you.
Yes, he did. And then...
Vlado is a slender man who is extraordinarily fit.
Yes. But then we have this internal rendering project inside Autodesk called RapidRT. It's available in Macs. It's called ART, Autodesk Ray Tracer.
Yeah.
One of the key programmer there was Peter Rundberg. Uh-huh. You can Google Peter Rundberg and you will find a giant man. He was a strongest man in Sweden 2 years in a row, I think.
Oh, really? One of those strongest man competitions?
Yes. And he is huge.
So but he was like the guy who plays the mountain on Game of Thrones.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
And he's the kindest, nicest person in the world, and he's hyper intelligent. Mm-hmm. But I was foolish enough to arm wrestle him too, because I now have started this trend. Uh-huh. Extremely stupidly of me, but now I'm forced to do it.
Have you arm wrestled Marcos?
I have not.
Yeah.
He does
have a renderer called Arnold, which seems that it should be something that you should arm wrestle.
This is a very good point. Yes. I have missed this. I have to tick it into my calendar now.
Yeah.
But let's just say even trying to arm wrestle Peter is an exercise's futility.
Yeah.
There are YouTube videos where he is you know, push pressing 350 kilos or whatever it is. Right. He's just insane. One of my funniest memories of him, though, it was one Sigroff. It was right here in LA. Mm-hmm. We were in the Marriott and the bar was closing down. We're just sitting there talking and some security guards come in and was going to like have us circulate, you know, don't sit in the bar, it's closing. Mm-hmm. Peter did nothing but stand up. Mm-hmm. He didn't make a single threat because he's the kindest person. He's the mm-hmm. giant teddy bear. But he stood up and the cops or the security guards, they looked up at him and say, you can be here as long as you want.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
That was tangent number 237. Yeah. How do we rescue this?
I don't know. Remember what we were talking about. We were talking about arm wrestling.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Game theory. I don't know.
Did you see the video of the Siberian slapping competition?
I did not.
I don't know why this came up. I think it's because of the arm wrestling, right?
Okay.
And it's literally the Siberian slapping competition. And it's these guys, they stand next to each other. And then one person slaps the other person. And then the other person slaps the other person. And there was this one guy, he just would slap people so hard that they would pass out
right.
immediately.
Right.
Just knock them out.
Yeah.
And it's open fist, open hand, you know,
yeah.
a slap.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. That is, now I've officially gone completely on the weeds. Back to Sigraf.
Yeah, I don't think we should use slapping for renderer comparisons in the future.
No.
I do need to arm wrestle Marcos now, though.
Yes, that's, you do need that, to. That's, yes.
I have to. But that'll probably be the grand finale of this extremely poorly thought out idea.
Yeah. Yep.
Speaking of game theory, I was almost saying.
Game theory.
Well, not game theory, games in general.
Yes.
This is complete in the weeds. If you have an Android
phone. I stop now.
If you have an Android phone. There's a game there called Slightly Annoyed Rodents. I might have written that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's not in the weeds. That's related to stuff you do.
Yeah, because it's all in QT. And
that's a very cute game.
It's a very cute game, yeah. So let's be clear. This has nothing to do with Angry Birds because these are rodents, not birds, yeah. and they are not angry. They are just slightly annoyed.
Right.
You can go to android.annoyedrodents.com and it's hilarious.
Okay.
That's all I will say about that.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go. Something to pass your time on your next flight.
Yeah.
To,
As you can tell, I'm getting a little jet lagged here, so we're really...
Well, the good thing is that you're flying back to Sweden.
I am. So I'm going straight from here when we get bored of this. And I'm going to the airport.
Okay.
And flying home to Sweden. And
direct flight?
Direct flight, yes.
SAS?
Yes.
Nice.
Very nice. Very nice. By the way, one interesting thing I was thinking about.
Mm.
On the road here, I wonder if it has something to do with the atmosphere or... It seems that sunlight here looks different to me than sunlight does back home in Sweden.
Of course it does.
So why would that be different?
You know, your sunlight does not get as high as ours does. We go through less atmosphere.
Well, I mean, we're tilted 22.4 degrees, and in the summer, we have way...
We're in the middle of summer, so right. The sun is always going to be, it's going to be higher than it was ever be achievable in Sweden. So you're already going to have, number one, less atmosphere.
Right.
And then we also have, I'm pretty sure our air is drier than your air.
Yes, that seems to be a parameter.
Less, and we probably also have more ozone
mm-hmm.
in our lower atmosphere. So we have ozone, which affects the quality of the light.
Right,
but lesser atmosphere through, plus less humidity
sense.
To go through.
Makes sense. Or I think I'm just thinking, but you're probably right. With the angles, is different because, it has to be right because I mean we have in Sweden.
I was in Iceland.
The sun sets, you know, at midnight and comes back up at 2 a.m.
Right,
but it does so at more of an angle, I guess.
Right. I was in Iceland this summer, and I was like, it feels like it's always the afternoon because it's late afternoon because it's low.
So, pro tip to Hollywood people: if you want, the golden hour,
you got like
freaking go to Sweden,
go Sweden or Iceland or whatever, because you'll have like 5 hours of golden hour.
Yes, absolutely. And I also get this feeling, and tell me if I'm wrong, it almost feels like a saturation of everything is turned down here. Maybe it's drier also, so plants are less saturated. It feels more at home. It's like it's, you know, the vibrant filter is on and here it's off, basically.
Yes, things are drier, especially right now in the summer. So in the spring, mm-hmm. you'll see more green and yeah, stuff like yeah, that. Yeah. But now everything's
dry. It just felt wasn't so much the landscape that it was the light. I felt yeah. the quality of light was... I was almost want to bring out some spectral measuring device, but I don't have one.
It's bright. It's very bright.
Yeah, it's very bright.
I did notice this. You know, it was interesting because I noticed it in films. Mm-hmm. And I think I mentioned it. Interesting. This came up on another podcast, and I don't remember which one it was because I recorded so many this week. But the movie Garden State. Have you seen Garden State?
No, I don't think I have.
Anyway, it's a really cool movie. But the first part of the movie takes place in Los Angeles, and then the rest of the movie takes place in New Jersey. And the light is so different between mm-hmm. those two things, yeah. and you start to realize that, like, oh, they color corrected it differently. It's like. To some extent, yes. Mm-hmm. But if you looked at the LA one, it just felt bright and hot. And mm-hmm. the other one felt different. Yeah. And then someone said that they saw it was the same thing. It's like someone was talking about how European painters never really understood how to light things correctly. And then they traveled to Europe for the first time and realized, like, oh, the light here looks completely mm-hmm. different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it is important. I think that where, you know, when you sit there and you put your sun and sky system together, mm-hmm. right, in Max or V-Ray or whatever you're doing,
right,
do pay attention to your latitude. And do right. pay attention to the atmospherics
right.
and your aerial perspective and all that right, stuff because right, it right. will affect how things feel, you know?
Yeah.
Look at all the renderings done by the Mir guys, right, in Norway. Mm-hmm. They have a look to them that is very yeah. Norwegian.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got lots of sweeping sunsets and yeah,
yeah. and
more atmosphere.
Moody. Yes. Moody gray. And I love the fact that they can take something moody and gray that would normally feel depressing to feel so mm-hmm. beautiful and charming.
Well, trust me, it can be depressive when the sun is only up for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Did you see the sun today? No, I blinked.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah. yeah.
But we'll get it all back in the summer. That's the nice part. I really love Swedish summer. It's really nice. And I also find it interesting, you know,
we don't have much of a season here.
No, a lot of the max development happens in Montreal. And Montreal is on the 45th latitude, so 45 mm. degrees off the equator. Mm-hmm. I live 60 degrees north of the equator.
Right.
And we have basically identical climate. We almost joke, like, how was the weather today? And then say something and say, yeah, same here. You know,
right.
It was raining in Montreal. Yep, raining in Sweden. Sun is up in Montreal. Yep, sun is up in Sweden. It's nice. X degrees in Montreal. Same in Sweden.
Yeah.
All the freaking time. There's 15 degrees different in latitude. If you check on the map, Alaska or North Canada, where like this right. basically just, you know, penguins or whatever. Yep. No, penguins. Polar bears. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is they have, the Canadians.
The Canadians?
Like run around and go sing I'm sorry all the time. Whatever they have up there, we don't have that in Sweden.
yeah.
Apologies to all my Canadian
friends. Running around saying I'm sorry all
I'm
the
sorry.
Time.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry too, even though I'm Swedish.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I was in Iceland and it was 65 degrees there or something like that. Mm. Not far, not that different from Sweden, I guess.
I always find it
you must be in a little bit northern Sweden.
No, I'm in the if it
middle?
Divide, it, yeah, third up Sweden, basically.
Third up Sweden.
Yeah, so basically same latitude as Stockholm. So I'm straight west of Stockholm.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, I always find it so ironic that Greenland is full of ice and Iceland is full of green.
Yes.
Yeah. Someone made an error in the naming.
Yeah.
Bad naming.
I told you to name this one ice. Oh, well, we can't change it now. Yeah. Right. That's supposed to be ice and this one's green. Well, forget it. The map's already made.
Yeah, we already printed it. Yeah.
All right. We've gone officially into the weeds, my friend. But we have lots of things to look forward to. I wanted some closing ideas about SIGGRAPH 2020 being mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. Do you think you're going to be able to make it?
Unclear. It's always... you have to fight a little for the travel budgets and
sure.
stuff. So maybe, maybe not. I can neither confirm or deny anything there or say for sure.
Right.
But it would be interesting. I've never been in Washington. So I hear this little thing called an election the same year.
Same year, yeah. Yep.
I'm just guessing it might be a little messy somehow. I don't know. I have no idea.
We'll find out.
I'll be. But if I get to go there, it will be really interesting.
Cool. All right, Tap. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up, my friend. But if there's any closing remarks or any thoughts that you have later, let me any know. I can put it in the intro. We'll put links about your games, all the other stuff you're going on there. We'll also remember you have a minimum of 5 weeks I'm giving you.
Awesome.
To write your new theme song.
So we just might get that synth pop version I have in my head.
Synth pop, got it.
Yeah, and that might be Famous Last Words, and I totally regret saying
that.
Or
you should do a K-pop version.
Then I need you, and we should need to do a dance number if that's the case.
Yeah.
That'd be the episode 3 if we do one.
Okay.
Because I just realized I promised you part 2 of all the history. We haven't done a single historical thing.
We haven't. So we still have. See, now we have something to look forward to part 3.
We needed part 3.
But we've had a great conversation.
We had.
We've had a great conversation.
We talked about interesting things.
We did.
Not sure what it
foxes
was.
Foxes and stuff.
Foxes. Welcome to the ornithology. What's it called? David Attenborough. Eat your heart out.
All right. Thanks, Zap.
No problem.